You're listening to episode 2. This is our year Knicks fan podcast.
Hey guys, this is Jason. If you're enjoying our content, please follow us on our social media accounts, Our Year Knicks Podcast on Instagram and NY This Is Our Year on Twitter.
Knicks thanks. Down three, should the Bulls foul? No. Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down. The game is tied.
Welcome to This Is Our Year, a New York Knicks podcast. Here are your hosts, Jason and Joel.
What's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in. This is our second episode. My name is Jason. We have a lot to get into, some of it planned, like the second part of our three-part series detailing our past, present, and future with the Knicks, our weekly This Week in Knicks Land segment, along with some not planned content, right, Joel?
Yeah, we do have a couple little surprises for you today. It was a very odd week, I would say, Jason. And I feel like unexpected things happen and we have to put it into the show. So the first topic we're going to target today, we're going to go right into it, Jason. We had an unexpected incident with our owner this week. Wasn't prepared at all to talk about James Dolan. You know, let's be real. He's just not a good NBA owner. I don't feel like he, you know, really cares about the team, in my opinion. But he did make the news this week. He didn't get into an incident with a fan. So I guess we're going to go ahead and talk a little about that. Jason, go ahead.
Yeah, I am. And I hate talking negatively about people, especially when I don't know them personally and I don't know their circumstances. But goddamn, does James Dolan make it easy?
Very easy, Jason. Very.
So for whoever doesn't know what we're talking about, let me recap what happened this weekend at the Garden. The Knicks returned from their West Coast trip and they were hosting Sacramento Saturday night. And towards the end of the night, another loss, by the way, which we'll get into later. James Dolan, who likes to sit more or less in, around Celebrity Row. I don't know if you noticed that. He likes to sit with, you know, like with the players and celebrities. I'm not sure why, but he starts to walk off and go into the tunnel. Apparently, this was all planned. What happens is recorded and there's this guy. He gets close enough to James Dolan that he can hear him and tells the guy to sell the team. Yeah, I've watched the video several times. And what happens next is a classic passive aggressive behavior. And I know because I'm very similar. I have that trait. I get very passive aggressive.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dolan stops, acknowledges the guy, and then he responds with, "So you think I should sell the team?"
Yeah, he has a little like smirky, like asshole look in him right away too off the bat.
Yeah, no, and I could feel kind of like the anger building up inside
and
of him.
The tension, exactly. Yeah, for sure, for sure. But Jason, I think he's just been hearing it for so long that he finally snapped, I would say.
Yeah, he waves the guy to come closer, which is like, you know, daring him. Like, I dare you to repeat, which is like, get close to me and tell him, you know.
Yeah,
and that's something I personally would do. So like, I'm telling you, like, I totally know what this guy was feeling because I'm very similar in that aspect. So the guy tells him to get closer and Dolan tells him that he's being rude by telling him to sell the team.
Right.
And that if he doesn't want to come to any more games, and I'm like, okay, like, you know, like everyone kind of is like, oh, what do you mean? At this point, the fan tries to defend himself and tell James Dolan that he was just expressing his opinion, to which Dolan then responds to, no, it's not an opinion. And you know what? Enjoy watching them on TV.
So he basically banned him from the Garden for speaking the truth. And I'm not saying that it wasn't a planned incident, Jason. It could have been. I mean, why not? It could have been.
It seems like it.
Of course. Yeah. And he can't prove it no matter what. But it seems like it was a planned incident. But it's just something you don't say. It's something you should ignore, at least. I mean, the guy has made tons of questionable decisions as the owner of the team. So I think that's why the fans feel the way we feel. I mean, think about all the bad moves he's made as a owner, right? Hiring Isaiah Thomas, and not only hire him because of his basketball quote unquote expertise, but hiring him because he was his friend. They were close. And I
like
get
him.
It.
He likes him.
He likes him, exactly. But that was not the right move for the franchise. At least in the beginning, he was like, let's give this guy a shot. But then he stuck by him while he made bad trade after bad trade. Isaiah Thomas eventually became the coach. Later, he became the president of operations. And he just set the franchise back years, Jason. So that's one bad decision. And he's had other altercations with fans in the past. That altercation a couple of years back with Charles Oakley as well, where he kicked them out of the Garden and said banned them from the Garden. It's just an ongoing situation with this guy. And I think he just finally snapped because he knows that the fans and the city definitely do not want him here or do not feel connected with him as the owner.
Yeah, and we'll get into that some more. But then let me finish with this little, story here of, what happened. So the guy, Dolan insists on pointing this guy out, tells security, get him out. He's done. Mm-hmm. It blows up on the social media. This is on Saturday. So by Monday, this is like, everyone is talking about it. All the, radio shows, all the TV, ESPN, everybody's like on top of this. It blows up. James Dolan decides he wants to go on the Michael Kay Show. Correct. A local New York radio sports talk show, for whoever doesn't know, and explain himself. By the way, this network is not owned by, it's owned by Disney, so it has no connection to MSG or anything, which is what I found interesting.
I found that very odd that he went on the Yes, it was on the Yes Network, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, on the Yes Network. And it's a rare thing for James Ohno to do, by the way. He doesn't really give interviews.
Especially interviews about the Knicks. You rarely hear him even talk about the team.
And why does he do this? I think it's because he cares about what certain people think, and we'll get into that in a moment. But did you listen to the interview?
I did. So I quickly, when everything happened, I was investigating, like, why would this happen? And I happened to Google James Dolan fan altercation, and I happened to run into the interview, and I was able to see the interview. It was a little odd, Jason, I would say. I think that he seemed like a person who wasn't well prepared for this interview. He didn't seem like he was well prepared to take questions about the team.
Yeah.
I think he expected pity. Like, the way he came out in this interview was like, oh, look at me. I'm this guy who's being, attacked by a fan. Take pity on me, guys.
And before you move on, that's exactly one of the things I did not understand. He called it an ambush, Joel. He called it an ambush. And if you watch the video, he decided to respond to the guy, to the guy, and then respond and interact with him while, bro, I'm sure you've heard this before. You've heard criticism before. He did not make you do any of it. How do you call it an ambush?
Like I said, I just think he had enough to him. I think he's been tolerating for years and years and years. I'm sure that fans let him have it every second they're at the Garden whenever they see him. And I think this particular day, after another tough loss, he just couldn't help himself. He just couldn't help himself anymore.
Yeah. So, I watched the interview too, and one of the major things I noticed, and I think you noticed this too, he doesn't follow his own team or basketball. You could tell because he's reading the names off of a notepad. He brings a notepad to this interview. He's reading names and stats off of the notepad. You telling me you couldn't remember this?
It was pathetic, Jason. I thought it was pathetic that the owner of an NBA franchise has to literally read the names of his players off a sheet of paper. It seems that he doesn't care about the team. He just cares about his net income. An owner who isn't familiar, in my opinion, with the team, that's all that you need to know about the guy. He just doesn't know about the team, and it doesn't seem like he cares. I feel that he might, one thing that I've always said, and I think I've said this to you before, he might own the Garden, right? The rights, he owns Madison Square Garden. He might own the MSG Network and Cablevision and all that. But technically, without the fans, he wouldn't have a team. Yeah. And I think he doesn't really understand that. In that interview, he pretty much said, I can pretty much do anything I want. Which, yes, is true, but at what cost?
You know what else he said that I didn't understand why he would say that? And regardless of whether I think it's true or not, but he said that when the Knicks lose or don't do well, that he hurts more than fans. Like, he feels like it's like a personal failure, and it hurts him more than hurts us fans. Come on, bro. Come on.
I think that he's rich. So rich people feel that somehow, some way, everything they do, or everything exactly, and everything everyone else does just doesn't matter. So I think that, again, I feel like he wanted pity is the reason why he went on the Michael K show. He also stated that he something about that he loves to win more than anything. I mean, like, mm-hmm, I think that's what I'm really paraphrasing now. I love to win more than anything. No, well, the team hasn't won anything since you've been owner. I mean, we haven't been a consistent playoffs consistently for 20 years.
I agree. Like, come on. Really? You love winning like more than anything else? Come on.
We're talking about the guy, like I said, and I said a little earlier. He just kept letting Isaiah Thomas make all these bad trades, and they were all going through him at that point. He was very, very involved. I think the only good thing that's come out of this modern Knicks team or this last couple of years is that after the Phil Jackson debacle, which again, another mistake, and I'm not going to blame him as much. Phil Jackson was a basketball mind, quote unquote, right? When he came here, but he just wanted to implement an old system that does not go along with the new NBA.
Yeah.
And after that, it seems, Jason, that he took a step back and said, you know, I'm not going to get involved as much with the team. And guess what's happened since then, Jason? I'll tell you what's happened since then. We made a trade, which we spoke about last episode, which, you know, we all went crazy about. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But we got draft picks back. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something good that's happened since he hasn't been involved.
Yeah.
We got cap space to sign some free agents. That's something good that's happened. He hasn't been involved. And we kept our young players, most of our young players, and we got young players back in Dennis Smith Jr. So I think that him not being involved with the team directly benefits us way more than him being part, involved in the daily activities like he used to be.
I agree. And that's the thing. I think he struggles with letting people, or he used to struggle with letting other people be in charge of basketball operations or personnel decisions. And he's finally, I think, had it with, you know, the criticisms and losing. And he said, all right, maybe I need to do something else and let someone else take charge. Because like you said, once he's supposedly backed off, now the team's starting to move forward with some kind of plan that looks like it's reasonable and that makes sense.
And that might work, right? Like, I think we're hopeful that it might work. One thing he should have shown, however, if he really cares about this team, Jason, is more composure in something like this. We all know that the NBA, we all know that other fans destroy the Knicks. You know, we're the dysfunctional franchise in the NBA.
Yeah, and we're the laughing stock.
Correct. And by doing something so silly, by responding to a fan, regardless of this incident being planned, responding to a fan, an insignificant fan, right? It's just adding more fuel to the fire that the Knicks are a dysfunctional franchise. If we're trying to attract free agents and they're trying to play here in New York, we had all this KP situation going on. I'm not saying it was all the franchise's fault, right? But hey, we traded our best player because he didn't want to be here. And now the owner is, you know, adding fuel to this fire. And I don't know how free agents are going to want to come here, Jason, after something like this.
Well, here's the thing. And since you mentioned it, during this interview, he was irrationally positive about the offseason.
Yes, he was.
He alluded to like, oh, you know, I think we're going to have a very, you know, productive. We're going to have a very positive, productive. I forget the word he used, but he was very positive about the offseason. And I mean, what do you think about that? Like, I personally think he's just, you know, blowing smoke up our, you know, behind.
I think he's bluffing in the sense that how much information could we really have? We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, we'll get into it in another episode. Yeah. But everyone knows that the one guy that everyone's saying is going to come here is Kevin Durant. Does Dolan know something we don't know? Maybe. But I think he was trying just to get out of the good side out of this. You know, get something positive out of this. Hey, you know, this happened, but guess what? This offseason, we're going to get free agents. I think that's what he wanted to do with that comment.
I agree. But and wrapping up this whole thingy, I'm going to give you my, I guess, thoughts about James Dolan. I personally think he's a bad owner, and not because of what's happened on the court as much, but because of things like this, the way he behaves. He doesn't behave like someone who's a leader. He doesn't behave as someone who inspires, you know, confidence. Right. And, you know, right. And he inherited this team, and I don't think he understands what it takes to be successful. And he has done almost close to nothing to ensure that this company remains profitable. He's very lucky that the Knicks are in New York.
Very.
And I think that's what he's, you know, hanging his hat on.
And lucky that he has fans who cares, who, you know, who follow this team and care about this team. And lucky that, you know, it's the mecca of basketball and that we're such passionate fans. I think he's gotten very lucky. I mean, I'll give you my final thoughts about it. I think that, of course, just like you were alluding to, he's just not a good owner. He doesn't seem to care about the outcome. As long as those seats in the Garden are being filled every night, he can care less. You could, he should take examples from owners that actually care about their team, that players are happy around them. Look at Steve Ballmer from the Clippers. Look at Mark Cuban, all players who play for him, they rave about this guy, right? If he was that type of owner, then maybe this, you know, this streak of bad years would have finished a long time ago.
How about this? How about just stop, like, being on the news? Like, honestly, how many owner names do you know, like, outside of, like, the ones you mentioned? How many owners do you see on the news or that you know, that you hear about, like, on
very,
the
very, video? Very little. I know so, about these two guys mostly because they're always at the games. They're very passionate. You can tell that they enjoy basketball, right? So that's the reason why I know these games. But you're so right. This guy, one thing that I would say that I've noticed, every single time they put the camera on him while he's at a game, when he happens to be at a game, Jason, he looks pissed off. I've never seen this guy smiling at a Knicks game. I get the Knicks haven't been good in years. I guess I get we really are really bad this year, but smile once in a while, right? Show that positive attitude so fans can say, hey, maybe we do have a chance of getting better because our owner actually believes in us, right? He does not believe in the team. That's a big problem. All right, guys. So we are going to continue now our second part of our three-part series, which is going to focus specifically on the present. Last week, we focused on the past, and today we're going to, you know, focus on the present players we have. We're going to analyze these players. We're going to go over their strengths and their weaknesses, and each of us is going to give our take on how we feel about these players. We're going to give our take on which players we should keep and move forward with for next season.
Gotcha. Who are we starting with?
All right, guys. So we're going to start with Frank Ntilikina, the French prince. He's had a
hot topic,
Jason. Frank's had a rough Knick career, I would say, a start to his Knick career. We thought he wasn't the guy we were going to draft, and Phil Jackson ended up drafting him. Yeah. He became a little bit of an intriguing player last year for me, Jason, because he is somewhat of this defensive specialist, and he did very well on defense last year. I think he's taken a little bit of a step back, but Jason, you can go ahead and start and tell me how you feel about Frank Ntilikina. What are your thoughts?
So he kind of similarly to Porzingis when we drafted him, we were all kind of like, who? What?
Right. that's exactly how I felt.
And he did have a good freshman year, in my opinion, for what I was expecting. But his sophomore year has been a complete disaster.
Abysmal, Jason.
I'll read the stat and then you can tell me what you think about this, all right? Fine. Mm-hmm. So Ntilikina was the only player in the league with at least 200 field goal attempts to post an effective field goal percentage below 40%, and just the fourth player in NBA history to attempt more than 700 shots over his first two seasons, yet shoot below 36% from the floor. Wow. And I think that wraps up Frank's issues right now. He just can't score.
He's a shooting guard that can't shoot.
It's really bad, and I'm totally surprised at how bad he's been. I don't know about you, but his defense is close to elite when he's on the court. He needs to stay healthy.
Right.
If free agency goes the way it does go, we are going to need some more affordable, defensive-minded, off-the-ball, which is key, off-the-ball role players.
Yep.
And if we can pair Ntilikina up with some offensive talent, so which means he won't have to really worry about contributing on the offensive side. I think he's going to be a pretty good player for us still. He's only 20 years old, and I think he can develop into a defensive specialist, kind of like Marcus Smart or Andre Robinson. Mm. And that rookie contract really helps us with the cap space.
A lot. I agree. I mean, in my opinion, Jason, we spoke about this before. I just think he's regressed big time his sophomore season, Jason. I do agree that we will need more defensive-minded players, and we're going to go ahead and grab some players that are offensive-minded. We are going to need players off the bench that play defense and can stop players on both ends of the court. It's like you said, he is out shooting himself out of a spot in the
really
rotation.
Really bad.
I mean, think about this. 35% from the field this year. He shot 33% last year, but he's 35, below 36%, like you said. He's actually at 35% from the field. Yeah. Not an improvement at all. Nope. And as far as shooting the three ball, Jason, just 28%. I mean, he's practically a guard who cannot shoot.
Can't shoot.
We all know he was a project when he got drafted. We just weren't expecting him to develop so slowly and also regress in shooting. He's just, you know, the only positive I see in him is his defense. I think that he gained a little bit of weight this offseason. He put up some muscle. That will help him, you know, defend bigger and stronger players. But at the same time, he's been injured, so we haven't really been able to see a lot of him this season. Exactly. I think he appeared in like 38 games or 40 games, something like that.
That's the thing with him. He needs to stay healthy.
Right. And also, it's like you're saying, he could develop into an elite defensive stopper, but then he becomes very one-dimensional. He's already very one-dimensional, but if he focuses more on his defense to develop his defense, then he's going to become even more one-dimensional.
No, I'm personally fine with that. I'm at the point where I'll accept Frank becoming a one-side player, defensive, or maybe at best a 3-and-D type of guy. And I know maybe that's asking a lot, right? Because you know, the stats you just gave me.
Terrible shooting, 28%. Yeah.
But if he could become an elite stopper, like some of the best guys in the NBA, I think I'll be fine with that. And there's nothing that can stop him from becoming that as long as he puts in the work.
Yeah, I think that if he becomes someone like a Patrick Beverley type of player, the guard from the Clippers, who can occasionally put the ball in the basket, mm-hmm. but focuses and puts all his efforts on defense, then it wouldn't be that bad. I'm just upset that we wasted a pick on him for him to be a defensive like specialist in the league.
He was sixth overall, or was it fourth overall?
I think he was eighth overall. Eighth overall. Man, that's rough. That's a rough one, Jason. I think he can still develop into, again, an elite stopper, but he's more of a combo guard now. You know, he needs to work a lot on his shooting. And then, you know, I don't know where he fits. He's a little tall for a point guard. He's about 6'5". He has a large wingspan. And then also his ball handling needs a lot of work, Jason.
Yeah. And I'll ask you this question before we wrap up Frank's analysis, but would you be okay with a starting backcourt of Dennis Smith Jr. and Frank next year if we don't get anyone?
I think that I'd rather start Trier ahead of Frank Ntilikina. We'll speak about that a little later.
All right. So are you ready to move on from Frank, or do you think we should keep him and, you know, develop him?
I think he's going to be a cheaper option than Mudiay, who is a free agent. I think Mudiay has done a little bit here that might have earned a contract that we might not be able to match. Okay. And I think that, again, his willingness to defend gives him a lot of upside for us next year if we pick up guys who are more offensive minded. So I'm not ready to move on. However, I would not be mad at the management if we traded him for a first rounder or a second round pick, Jason.
All right. I'm actually on the same boat. I do think we should develop him. I think it's, you don't find those guys off the street, guys who are so like as good as him defensively. But if we get something in return that's worth it, then by all means, go ahead and do it.
All right. So that's a wrap for Frank.
Okay, Joel, let's talk about Trier. How do you feel about him, and what's his role moving forward with the team? I personally, before I let you jump in, I personally think that Trier definitely has potential to be a good role player, maybe even a six man, but he definitely needs to learn how to be more unselfish.
Yeah.
He's going to be coming off the bench most likely, I think. I mean, I think you disagree, but he still needs to be able to find open man, regardless of whether or not he's a six man or he's in the starting rotation, and not hold on to the ball as much in certain plays. What do you think about Trier, though?
You know that Trier is one of my favorite Knicks right now. He's one of my favorite players on the team, so I have like a high standard for him, and I don't want to talk too good or too bad. So I'm just gonna, you know, speak honestly about how I feel.
Try to be objective. Him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because he's one of my favorite players on the team. I wanna be objective. I don't wanna be speaking incredible about him all the time. So in my opinion, Trier is an excellent off the dribble shooter. I mean he thrives in isolation plays, Jason. He has a quick first step, so he blows by defenders with ease all the time. I think that that's a very good positive thing he has.
But I agree.
But like you said, he definitely needs to work on his passing. He needs to become a willing passer, and he also needs to become a willing defender. I see him watching out there sometimes, and I think that he focuses more on his offensive side of the game, and he needs to focus a little bit on his defensive side of the game. I also think, Jason, that he's sometimes overly aggressive on defense, which leads to like fouls, unnecessary fouls. However, I've noticed, though, that he does have a knack for steals, which it's a positive. It seems that he's hustling out there. But like I said, he tends to be overly aggressive. So what happens is that he's always usually in foul trouble when he's out there. I can definitely see him turning into a really good sixth man in the NBA. I think that's written all over him. It all depends on, you know, how the team is structured next year.
Yeah.
But we touched up a little bit in the Frank Ntilikina segment. I think that him along Dennis Smith Jr., if that's the guys we're going to start at the one and the two, work very well together with two other superstars, for the fact that he can shoot. Like I said, he can drive the ball pretty well. So if the focus of the defense is on the other two guys that we have, like the max slot guys, then he might have the potential of, you know, kind of like contributing more to the score. So I think that's why I feel like him in the starting lineup, depending on who we pick up, can work better than Frank and Dennis Smith Jr.
I gotcha. So, and wrapping up Trier, do you believe he is a future Nick pass this year?
Absolutely. He has a role in our team, and I think that he's one of the steals of the draft along with Robinson.
Yeah, well, he definitely was a steal. I personally see him more as a bench player, rotational bench player, but I will hope and I'll be very glad to be surprised if he turns out to be like, you know, six man or better.
All right, Jason. So the next player we're going to go ahead and analyze today is Kevin Knox. I'm sure that you have a lot of thoughts on him and how his season's going so far. It's been a rough rookie season for Kevin Knox, ups and downs. But what do you think about how he's played so far and where do you see him fitting with the team?
Yep. So Kevin Knox, unfortunately for me personally, he has been a lot more downs than ups.
Okay.
He's had a rough season, specifically with his shooting on the court.
Okay.
If you're into advanced analytics like I am, you'll know that Kevin Knox has been one of the worst, if not the worst, rookie when it comes to a stat called true shooting percentage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's based off of his usage rate. I mean, you can see it. Like, he's very wildly inconsistent, wildly erratic when it comes to shooting from the field. Mm-hmm. Whether it's sometimes it's even, like, in the paint, taking threes. He just misses a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And then what surprised me while I was doing my research about Kevin Knox is that his passing has been even worse than his shooting. And he's actually the sixth worst in assist rate.
Of all rookies. Wow. I didn't expect that stat. I think he also, like you said, he's inconsistent, Jason. And he'll have a game where you're like, wow, this guy looks amazing. And then the next game, he's just abysmal. I'm not sure if it's just a rookie thing. I'm not sure if it's a confidence thing, but I completely understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. And it's crazy because I haven't even gotten into his defense, which has been, according to the analytics, even worse than that. Like, he's just been a mess, a train wreck on defense. And I could bore you with stats all day to support my claims. But the point is he's been inefficient and he has nowhere to go but up. I don't see him as a starter next year.
Okay.
Unless he has like a great summer league, you know, campaign and he does well in preseason. And obviously depends on who we pick up this offseason. But he needs to get stronger. He needs to be more consistent and he really needs to get stronger on defense. He gets pushed around a lot.
I agree.
And I'm hoping that he can develop a left hand. He struggles. Like, he's easy to defend because he has no left hand.
He's predictable is what you're saying.
Yeah, and he has no left hand.
And I think, in my opinion, his overall game is predictable. I have a couple of pros that I see in him. One thing is that he has a long wingspan, and he's only getting He can still grow a little bit more. Yeah. And I think that one thing that's good about him, Jason, is that he can actually play multiple positions where he can also eventually guard multiple positions. And I think that's something that works in this new positionless type of NBA that is developing. He's a very good driver of the ball. So one thing that we discussed in episode one, and I don't know if you remember, he just doesn't drive the ball enough. That's his forte. So he should focus on driving the ball more, in my opinion. One thing that's good about him, he's not afraid of contact. So he does go into the paint and finishes in the rim, you know, over bigger defenders. He seems not to just be bothered by contact. So like
I
said,
I'm glad you have some positive about him, because honestly, I just don't see it. And I'm hoping to see something better from him next year.
Like you said, the cons are more than the pros. He needs to learn to take better shots. Jason, he takes the first shot. He takes early shots in the shot clock. At times he just looks lost on defense. He seems not to know how to read the floor well. He's lost on the defensive end. Like I said, he just loves to chuck up transition threes, Jason. So that's something that he needs to really work on in the offseason.
I hope he gets stronger and works on that, because he was sixth overall?
Sixth overall pick.
I believe he was sixth overall. Don't take my word for it. But the point is, he needs to do better. We have high hopes for him, and let's see what he gives us next year. If you had a chance to trade him, though, would you right now? That's my final question to you. Final point.
Final point, it has to be for the right player. If we end up with the number one pick, there are going to be offers, and I think Kevin Knox will be part of those offers that teams are going to be looking for to trade. And, you know, Anthony Davis is one of those players that's out there that has voiced his opinion and wants to leave his team. So it just depends on who the player is. I think that Knox has a big upside because he's still very young. So
that is true.
Only a rookie, and we've seen other rookies play horrible for the first couple of years. I'll give you an example. Paul George was just not a very good player his first 3 years in the NBA. And Paul George is currently a superstar. So I wouldn't give up on him just yet.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we'll get into it, I guess, more throughout the season, but I need to see something from him, and I need to see it soon. If not, I'm ready to trade him for something back.
Gotcha.
All right, up next, Mitchell Robinson. Obvious starter for the future, but Joel, what's his ceiling? What does he need to work on?
All right, so in my opinion, I still believe, and I will continue to believe this, a lot of people don't agree, he is the steal of the draft. I think he's played very close to what the number one pick in this draft has played. Mm-hmm. He's played very similar to Ayton. I would say in some categories, even better. So to me, he is already, Jason, currently a top 10 defensive center already in the NBA.
Definitely in the conversation.
A top 10, in my opinion, already. He's a freak athlete who, you know, is an excellent rim protector. I think that's something that's kind of missed in the NBA. So I think he's an excellent rim protector. Also, I think that he rebounds for his frame at a very high rate. Imagine when he develops into his body, how good he could be as a rebounder. He's definitely has double-double potential. Every night, double-double guy who can consistently get you multiple blocks, Jason.
Yep, definitely. And I hate to be the one who's always, you know, with the cons, giving the negatives, but there's one thing I want to see him work on is his defense in terms of fouling. Yeah. He's super aggressive sometimes, and he gets into foul trouble early in the games, and then he gets pulled, and it affects obviously his stat line at the end of the game, and he doesn't, you know, he's not in there sometimes at specific points of the game that are important. And I would like to see him work on that. But everything you said, it was like right on the nose. He's definitely a freak athlete. He definitely can be, if not already, a elite defender at the five. For sure. I personally see him as his ceiling. And if you want to talk about who you want to compare him to, but he's reminding me of Rudy Gobert in a lot of kind of facets. If you even look at their bodies, Rudy Gobert is not a brolic guy. He's not that strong, but he's long and he's athletic. And if you compare them, you'll see that they have very similar frames. And I think that's a good comparison and a good ceiling for Mitchell Robinson. He could be our Rudy Gobert. And Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player in the NBA right now, in my opinion.
He deserves a lot more credit than what he gets. And, you know, I think that I would compare him to a Rudy Gobert, but I kind of see him a little bit more like a DeAndre Jordan, just his style of play. I know it sounds kind of weird that DeAndre's on our team now and DeAndre's kind of like, you know, mentoring him a little bit. But I kind of see him as a DeAndre Jordan with the potential of working with some sort of offensive coach and developing an offensive game. So in my opinion, cons for him, Jason, really quickly, so we move on here. He needs to develop some type of offensive game, Jason. He's very one-dimensional. In my opinion, he has zero post moves. Yeah. Not sure where he can contribute in the offense besides alleys and putbacks.
I agree, but you have to admit some of those alleys and dunks are amazing.
Very amazing, yeah. So I look forward to seeing those at the Garden a lot more next season.
Definitely. Up next is Dennis Smith Jr. How good is Dennis Smith Jr., Joel? Can he be our starting point guard moving forward?
I sure think so, Jason. I think he has the potential to be a very, very good NBA player, very good NBA point guard. One thing that I love about him is that he's just fearless out there. He's the second year in the league and he just seems fearless out there. He's very comfortable running on offense, not afraid of contact, Jason, and constantly drives to the paint, which one thing about that, as we all know, it could lead to easy scoring. Once you go into the paint and you get fouled, easy 2-point shots from the free throw line. So I think that's something that I really like about him. At times, he looks like a floor general. At times, he seems to be a willing passer at times.
Yeah.
I feel like if he had like better players around him, he might be a better passer, become a better passer.
100% agree with that. That's exactly one of my things with him I noticed too, that I feel like if he had more talent around him, that would make him so much better. That would elevate his game even
absolutely.
more.
Absolutely.
I was reading an article the other day, I think it was the New York Post, and they were talking about how Dennis Smith Jr. has had to play kind of as hero ball on every team he's been on, if you notice.
So far,
So far. In college, he carried his team, and in Dallas, up until Doncic came, he was the one that was kind of playing hero ball on those teams.
Correct.
Because
then he came here.
Exactly.
Obviously,
So if we get talent around Dennis Smith Jr., that can only help him.
Absolutely. I don't know if you want to talk a little about his cons. I can kind of talk a little bit about that. I think that one thing that he really needs to work on to like actually elevate his game, he needs to develop a consistent jump shot. I mean, he can make those open ones at a high rate, but he needs to get better shooting the three ball. He needs to get more consistent shooting the three ball. He's shooting just 31% from three. In a league that's becoming more a three-point shooting league, he needs to work on his three-point shooting game.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I guess following up on the cons, I think he needs to work on his turnover rate. I noticed that he turns the ball over often.
Right.
And it's not, I think it's something that he can work on, and it's more mental errors. It's not that he doesn't know what he's doing. It's just he makes kind of like sometimes bad decisions because he's trying too much. And another thing he needs to work on is the free throws.
Oh, yeah.
He's been missing free throws.
He's been missing very, very much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's 21 years old and still on his rookie contract. He's one of those guys that has a lot to, like, he has a lot to learn, but he's going to be even better, like, as he gets more players around him and he gets kind of used to our system.
Yeah, I think that I'm not sure if he can play off the ball, Jason. So that's something that I think he needs to work on. That's why the shooting would definitely help him if he's playing with other players who are better, who can shoot the ball better. He's going to have to learn to play off the ball if he wants to contribute.
Yeah, and let me ask you a question. Let's say we got one of these free agent point guards during this offseason. I don't know, Walker or Kyrie. Can you see Dennis Smith Jr. playing the two guard?
He would be very undersized, so it would have to be in a very small lineup that we would put out there.
Yep.
You know, that's something that's, again, all these trends are happening the last maybe 5 or 6 years in the NBA where teams continue to use small lineups. I think he might fit in with someone like Kyrie in the sense that it would be hard, Jason, actually, if I'm honest. It would be hard for him to fit with someone like Kyrie or Kemba Walker because they both demand the ball in their hands. And again, as of right now, Dennis Smith Jr. hasn't shown me he can be effective without the ball.
And that's my concern with him. One of my major concerns is moving forward, if we do, you know, hit the home run and get, you know, an all-star to play point guard.
Correct.
He's going to have to come off the bench, and that's going to hurt his development.
For sure. It's going to hurt his development. It's going to hurt his confidence. I think that he sees himself as a starting point guard. He sees himself like a floor general, and that would definitely hurt his development for sure.
Up next, we have Damian Dotson. Can he keep it up, Joel? Can he be as good as he's shown he has the potential to be?
I think that Dotson is an interesting player in our team. He's been one of the bright spots in our team this year. He's shown that he can actually be a very consistent shooter. I think that shooting the ball at 37%, he can only get better with the right players around him. So I actually think that he could keep it up. And I think that he has an excellent off the bench player potential for our team next season, depending on who we go ahead and sign in free agency. But one thing I really like about him, Jason, he does not need the ball in his hands to be consistent or to be effective out there.
Yep, that's what I love about him. He's definitely a catch and shoot guy.
Yes.
He hustles a lot too, which is something that's kind of underrated, and he contributes even when his shot isn't going in. He gives a lot of effort.
Right.
He plays defense very hard, but when the shot is going in, watch out. The guy gets hot. Yeah,
he's just a very streaky shooter. He reminds me a little bit of another one-time Nick. He reminds me a little bit of Smith.
JR, yeah.
He reminds me a lot of JR Smith because he gets really, really hot. I think, however, he's a better defender than what JR Smith has shown in the NBA. And I think that he's a willing defender, and that's something that's very valuable to a team that's trying to build, get some superstars. So someone who's a willing defender can come off the bench and play both sides of the ball. That can definitely help a bench and help a team get wins. One thing that I would say is that he's very one-dimensional right now. He's just pretty much a shooter, a sharpshooter. He's not very good driving the ball, even though sometimes I have to say he does surprise me, but he needs to develop a little bit more of his driving game. But I can definitely see him competing for the team next year. And he's definitely someone who's going to be on the team next year for sure.
Yeah, so he has two things that he has going for him. One, he signed for super cheap next year, a little over $1.5 million, which is a great number.
Yep. Absolutely.
And secondly, I read a report basically stating that Fizdale likes him, and for whatever this is worth, he believes that he can be a very, very good shooter. He's a good shooter already, but he can be a great shooter. Sorry. And this is what Fizdale says. So, take that, grain of salt.
I hope Fizdale's onto something with him.
All right, Joel. So up next, we have Emmanuel Mudiay, a pretty controversial player, in my opinion. Should we bring him back?
You know what it is about Mudiay? He's one of those players who I feel that at this point, he's been in the league a couple of years, and I think I've seen as much as he can show me.
Yeah,
he has been better for us, but you have to understand the only reason he's our leading scorer is because, we don't really have a superstar on this team. I think he would be lost in a team with a couple of superstars.
That's actually a very good point.
Yeah, and that's why he's our leading scorer, and I give him that. He has upped his game. He has become our leading scorer this year. One thing I don't understand, and I'll never understand, is the fascination that Fizdale has with him. He's always raving about him. He's raved about him in multiple occasions this season. But I just think we have a cluster of point guards. And if the plan is to develop Dennis Smith Jr., I really don't see where Mudiay fits.
I mean, I agree. And it's funny because I remember I actually wanted us to draft him.
Yeah.
And me too. Because I liked him. I liked his offensive game. I liked how he was athletic and he got to the rim. But I think you agree as well that he's going to demand money that you're not going to be able to afford.
That's correct. I think he's out of our price range in the sense that he's had a kind of an up year. He's been hurt, but he's kind of like had an up year. And I think some teams are going to offer him an offer that we're not going to match. And I think Frank at this point, sounds weird, but Frank might be the better option for us off the bench because of his willingness to play a lot of defense. Mudiay is just not a very good defender at all.
Yeah, and then let's say we do hit the home runs like I've been mentioning all episode long, and we do sign these big free agents. Where does he fit on the team?
Like I said, we have a cluster of guards with Trier and Dotson and Smith Jr. and Frank.
Yeah.
We just have a cluster of guards, and I think he's kind of like the odd man out because first he's going to demand a lot more money and he's not at Frank's defensive level.
Level, yeah.
Right, so.
I agree 100%, and it's going to be an interesting offseason, and this is going to be one of the, in my personal opinion, one of the kind of interesting points. I wonder what's going to happen. Like, are we going to sign him just because Fizdale likes him?
I hope not.
I hope not, but we'll see. All right, Joel. So we're going to finalize this segment. I guess throw out some names and see what you feel about them. All right.
All right. Yeah. We're going to go ahead and talk, about the remaining players on the roster. So go ahead, Jason.
Cornette. What do you think about him? Keep him, let him go.
All right, so he's going to demand a very, very cheap contract. He could be a guy who can contribute off the bench. I'm just not sure how much he can contribute off the bench. So I would say, in my opinion, I would let him go.
All right, I agree. Let him go. Noah Vonleh, keep him, let him go. Thoughts?
One thing about Noah Vonleh, even though he's played a big role in our team, I think he's going to be affordable for us, an affordable power forward option for us. I think that some of the good things that he has is that he's a very good rebounder. So I don't think we're going to find a cheaper, like, power forward option than him in the, you know, current market. But one thing that I think is that one thing that helps his stock to stay on the team is that if we pick up a player, you know, two superstars, he can contribute in other ways like defense and rebounding.
I pretty much agree with that. Noah Vonleh, he's a really good player, and I think he would be valuable to a lot of playoff contenders. So we're lucky to have him, and if we can sign him on cheap, then
I would say sign him for sure.
Exactly. All right. Lance Thomas, he's signed for next year, so he's not going to be a free agent. But what do you think about him? What are your feelings about Lance?
Lance is a good veteran presence. One thing I like about Lance, he's always been very, very good on defense, and he's always hustled on defense. So I think that keeping him on the team, there's no other choice anyways. But I think that one thing that's going to be good for him to be on the team is to mentor some of our young guys.
I agree. That's exactly what I think. He seems to be a locker room favorite. Right. People like him. Mm-hmm. And he does get paid a lot, though, man. If we could get rid of that contract, I would do it.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Exactly. All right. Kadeem Allen. What are your thoughts on Kadeem Allen?
He's actually not a bad player. Unfortunately, it goes back to this cluster of guards that he would just be another extra guard, you know, that we don't really need right now. So for that reason, I think he could still develop into a contributor in the NBA. But for that reason, I would say we won't actually keep him.
Yeah. So it's funny because I was on social media. I've been seeing some buzz about the Knicks looking to trade Frank this offseason, and they're saying we're willing to part ways with Frank because of Kadeem Allen. Kadeem Allen, apparently he brings a lot, and I'm not saying I agree. I'm just telling you kind of what I've been like, the consensus.
What you've been hearing,
exactly. That Kadeem Allen apparently contributes on defense, and he's better than Frank on offense, which is not saying much. Who isn't better than Frank on offense right now?
Right.
Any other players?
We still have one of the players we signed for the rest of the season, Henry Ellison. We picked him up.
Yep.
Detroit let him go and we picked him up. He shows a lot of spirit out there. I think that he's very aggressive. I think he wants to show that he can play in the NBA. It's all going to depend on how we fill the roster. He could be a roster filler. He could be one of those guys that we just bring him on to camp and then he stays on the roster, you know, kind of like the 12 men off the bench or something like that.
I'm actually kind of embarrassed that we forgot, even though I know this is like almost like a given. We're not keeping this guy, but DeAndre Jordan. I love the guy, but I don't think he's going to accept the veteran minimum. I don't think he's going to give us the discount. So
I don't think so.
I think he's been more than reasonable this year. He's let the young guys play, and I think he's very happy where he's at in his life. But at the same time, I don't think he's willing to just leave millions of dollars on the table.
Absolutely.
Just to stay.
I agree. But you never know. He's been reported to be very close to Kevin Durant. So if KD's here, you just never know.
What about Mario Hezonja?
Mario, Super Mario. Bro, I actually like Mario. I think that he hasn't gotten as much as opportunity to play. I think that in the right position in the team, he can contribute. So I would bring him back on a very minimum deal, which I think that's what he's going to demand, and I think that's what he's going to get. We never know.
Yeah, he's fan favorite, I think.
Definitely fan
favorite.
At least I
like him, you know, and I'm rooting for the guy. If he comes back, I'm going to be happy as long as we don't give him like a four-year, you know, $30 million deal or
something.
Gotcha.
Yeah, for sure.
This week in Knicks Land.
All right, Joel. So this week, we had a little trip to the West Coast where we faced off against the Clippers first.
Okay.
And we lost 128 to 107. We stayed in California, went against Sacramento. We also lost 115 to 108. But it's funny. It's kind of like you said, when we lose, it's kind of like a win because we're trying to tank, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to get in that conversation of having a top five, at least a top five pick. So we want that last place. So because of the new odds.
Yep. Exactly. So, and then we went on ahead and went against Phoenix, who we also lost to, 107-96. And finally, we returned to the Garden, where we failed to defend our home court, 102-94 to the Kings.
Yeah, all losses this week, Jason. It's a little hard to analyze a week of losses, but I think that it's part of the game. It's part of the process to lose these games. And I think the players definitely learn from losses, so I'm not all totally disappointed. And like you said a little earlier, we're trying to at least have the chances to not go any higher than the fifth pick for this upcoming draft.
Yeah, that's right. So with that said, it was a little difficult to pick a game of the week, but we decided, we decided to go with the Clippers 128-107 loss on March 3rd.
Okay.
So, Joel, in my opinion, it was a very Jekyll and Hyde performance roster-wise. What I mean by that is we had some nice performances or some good performances, but we also had some not so nice or bad performances.
I agree.
Specifically on offense.
Oh, yeah.
On defense, everyone was bad. And we got destroyed from the get-go, in my opinion. And I don't know, I'm sure you have some comments about this, but that rookie, Landry Shamet, I believe his name is.
Landry Shamet,
He led the way for the Clippers. 18 out of his 21 points came in the first half, all from three.
Yeah, it was kind of embarrassing, Jason. I mean, you always get, see some positives out there even when you're losing. So I did see some positives in this game, and it's one of the reasons why we picked this game as the game of the week. But unfortunately, like you said, these positives came with a lot of negatives. Our defense, once again, was super lazy. Landry Shamet, like you were saying, he was just killing us from behind the three-point line. He seemed to be open all game. We just weren't letting him shoot the ball at will. In that first quarter, he scored 15 points, Jason, on 5-for-7 shooting. And Gallinari was also on fire. He was also killing us in the post. He was also shooting the three ball pretty well. All in all, between Shamet and Gallinari, they combined for 27 out of 38 points in that first quarter, Jason. Pretty embarrassing for us.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Honestly, I felt like we never recovered from that first quarter. And I guess, we can talk about some of the positives, even though it was mostly negatives, like you said. Damon Dotson stood out to me. He led the team in scoring alongside with Vonleh.
Yep.
And Mitchell Robinson as well, he continued to impress. He's building a hell of a rookie season. He's taking advantage of, the time he's getting now with DeAndre Jordan's injury. Any thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, Damian Dotson, he kept showing us that he's definitely turning into an excellent catch and shoot player, Jason. He's very good coming off screens. He shot 4-for-8 from three for combined 17 points. I also thought Vonleh played well on both ends on the courts. And I think that's something that really helps his credibility with us on, maybe bringing him back. He scored 17 points. He added 12 rebounds. And Mitchell Robinson, man, our rookie, continue on that block rampage. He had 4 blocks this game, Jason.
Yeah, the guy is, he's definitely in the conversation for Rookie of the Year, in my opinion, and definitely rookie all defense, this year.
For sure. I think he has to get some votes for rookie all defense this year. He might make the all defensive team. That's a possibility. Yep. He might be in the conversation.
I agree. And moving on, players who did not play so well, specifically offensively, Kevin Knox, Kornet, even Ellison, who got some time, they all combined, all three of them, they made 3 field goals and they shot under 20% from the field. Wow. Kornet, at least he had some blocks and some steals, but it was garbage. It was garbage time.
Pretty much.
Blocks
pretty
and
much.
Steals, in my opinion.
Pretty much.
Let me know what you think about those guys though.
Knox was abysmal, if to put it in other words. I mean, the guy keeps forcing shots. I'm not sure if Fitzdale is not driving this in his head in practice. He just keeps forcing shots after shots. I mean, he only scored 6 points on 1-for-6 shooting. And I feel like his inconsistency is just hurting his development.
Yeah, and every time I see him just take a 3 on transition.
I cringe every time he gets a rebound and he pushes the ball up the floor. I cringe because I think he's just going to go ahead and shoot the shot. It's crazy.
Exactly. I think of you every time I see that now because I remember
it makes me cringe. Since his first game of this season, that's made me cringe because honestly, bro, that is one of the most, that's one of the worst shots in the NBA. It's that transition 3.
Definitely. And I guess to wrap that up, in my opinion, I don't know who told Knox he can take 3s, but someone needs to tell him, bro,
that's not you, bro. Not right now, at least. Like roll it back. I just think he was good though in college. But remember, the college 3-point line is a little closer. But I think he was just so consistent shooting the 3-ball in college that he thought it would translate into his NBA game, and it hasn't at all.
Definitely. And Moody, I still think he leads the team in scoring, right?
He is the leader of scoring. He does lead the team in scoring, Jason. That's correct. So he stepped it up again. He kind of is a little bit more of a veteran in quote unquote in this team. So he is stepping it up, and he is playing for a contract. So he is contributing out there.
I know this week was a little hard to pick a Nick of the Week, Joel, because it was a lot of kind of like losses, and usually it's hard to, you know, for someone to stand out. I was in between two players, okay. But who did you think deserved to get the game or the Nick of the Week? So
all in all, like you said, a lot of players played horrible and a lot of players played okay. Out of the bunch, I think that Dennis Smith Jr. played much better and was more consistent throughout the week. You know, he started the week really slow with the Clippers game, where he just scored 8 points, but had 6 assists. But after that, he was pretty consistent. He had 18 points, 5 assists against the Kings, 16 points, 5 assists against the Suns, and he added another 18 game two with the Kings that week. So he was pretty consistent compared to the other guys.
Yeah, definitely. I was in between Dennis Smith Jr. and once again Mitchell Robinson, but I'm going to agree with you and give it to Dennis Smith Jr. this week.
Perfect. So Dennis Smith Jr., you are the Nick of the Week. Congratulations. Well, guys, we've reached the end of episode 2. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please tune in next week. It's going to be the last part of our 3-part series. We are going to talk about our future, guys. Very important. We're going to talk about free agents. We're going to talk about how those free agents could actually mesh with our current roster. And we're actually going to talk about who our favorite free agents are and who we feel we should target in free agency.
That's right, Joel. It's a pretty exciting episode, in my opinion. It's what a lot of us Knicks fans are looking forward to.
Yes, sir.
And I definitely have a lot to say. If you guys want to follow us, you can follow us at and on Twitter at NY This Is Our Year, and on Instagram at Our Year Knicks Podcast.
That's right. So guys, follow us, give us a follow, show us some love. We're actually, you know, really appreciative of our listeners. So once again, that's at NY This Is Our Year for Twitter, and at Our Year Knicks Podcast for Instagram. Thank you so much. See you next week.
Thanks, guys.